Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune is with us once again for Parenting. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Right, first question for you is, our son has been diagnosed with dyslexia and I want to make sure that this does not hold him back in life. I'm dyslexic, so we recognise the signs early on and I feel like we're on top of it in terms of getting the school to acknowledge that he has difficulties. The one thing I really want is to make sure that he doesn't give up on reading altogether. I know as a child I felt completely stupid and dreaded reading aloud, to the point that it really impacted me later in life at trying to do presentations in my career. How can I encourage his reading and not let dyslexia hold him back? I know a lot has changed since I was a child, but being dyslexic was so difficult growing up that I don't want him to feel like he's not good enough compared to other students.
I think this kid is really lucky to have a parent who knows what it's like to have dyslexia. The only thing I would say, Sean, at the start of this is, being a parent who has had such a negative experience of education with dyslexia, how your dyslexia was responded to and how you were made to feel, a lot of that might still be quite unprocessed for that parent and now getting quite activated by their son's diagnosis. So just be really careful about, you know, what of this is your fear and your anxiety versus your son's experience. And just, you know, taking that time to, you deserved better. It doesn't matter that things have changed now and they weren't great then. No matter what, you deserved better. So it might be something that you want to explore and deal with yourself, for yourself. But aside from that, this little boy now, I don't know how old he is, but being diagnosed, you're talking to the school are on board, at least it seems. So this is really, really good stuff. And I really admire this parent going, how do we keep reading accessible, appealing and inviting for this boy? Because having dyslexia doesn't mean that reading should be off the table for you. But it's about really looking at what kind of books are written in a way that are accessible and appealing for kids who have dyslexia. So there are, you know, there's an Irish writer, I always like to mention if there's an Irish writer in this area, called Serena Malloy, and she has two lovely dyslexia text-friendly written books. But also just be aware that there are numerous books that his peers might be reading, that other kids are reading, that are also written in dyslexia friendly versions. So have a little look around. Now, I'm not going to say shop around, Sean, because you could end up spending a fortune before you know what you're looking for. And I think our libraries are underutilized resources. So go to the library, have them talk to you about what dyslexia friendly text for his age group they have. Have a look at those with him, see what he's interested in, and really keep that alive that way. But I think it's also about focusing on effort over outcome. So if there are books and he's much more interested in, say, for example, graphic novels where there's less text, but the story is also told in images, go with that. Again, this depends on age, but go with that. So if you focus on that, you'll be very interested in his trying. And that's what you'll be reinforcing for him. It's great to try, give it a go. Look, you didn't like that book, we'll go get a different one. That you don't make it that this is a really stressful, arduous task, but that this is reading for pleasure, reading for fun. And I would suggest reading the same book he's reading alongside, not over and back together, you know, but necessarily, but getting the same book for yourself so that you've something to talk about. Oh, I really like this, I didn't like that. And that the conversation about the books is what's interesting, even if the reading of the book isn't the bit he loves the best. But having something in common, a shared interest and something to talk about is. Really encourage his passions outside of reading, by the way. Whatever hobbies, activities, special interests that he has, so that you're building up self-esteem and confidence holistically and outside of school and reading or any academic work, that you're focusing on him in a very rounded, inclusive way. Because school is an important part of life. Of course it is, especially for children. It's where they spend most of their day every day. But it is just part of life. So broaden his pool of interest and really invest in him and what interests him, because we're going to really work on his self-esteem by reminding him how interesting he is.
Yeah. What does a dyslexia-friendly book look like if you open up the pages?
So they're written in a different kind of layout of text. So the sentences might be shorter, the layout, it's more prose style, actually, Sean, to describe it in that way. So you might have less words on a line, and then the other line, they mightn't be lined up completely, but a little bit staggered. So it's really the layout of the text that is different, and it makes it easier for the eye and the brain to process what's there.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. I have two great granddaughters, ages 11 and 8. Unfortunately, my 11-year-old can't seem to grow up fast enough. Two great daughters, I should say, not granddaughters. My 11-year-old can't seem to grow up fast enough. She's quite tall for her age and would pass for a teenager. I'm finding it very hard to accept her growing up and maturing so fast. Recently, when we went shopping for some clothes for her holidays, and all she wanted was bikinis, crop tops and dresses that were stuck to her. It resulted in a massive argument because I refused to buy half of it. I'm at a loss as to how to deal with her wanting to look and act so grown up when she's still only 11.
Oh, there's a lot there, though, isn't there, Sean, in that one? I think this is really relatable. I think there's a couple of things. First of all, we need to be mindful of the type of clothes that are marketed for children in big stores, that, you know, she's looking at things that are there for her age group. Whether we think they're appropriate or not is a separate discussion. So there is a piece around that to think about, what we're pitching and selling to our children. But I'm also wondering, when you say she's tall for her age and she would pass for a teenager, you know, I always feel for kids who are younger than they look, because it tends to be shown that others treat them as though they are older as well. So if she's getting a lot of kind of reinforcement from others, maybe not her mom or that, but from others who are like, oh, you're older, then that's also going to be giving her a message, yes, I am, and therefore I can act older and I can have things that are older. There's a little bit as well for me coming up in terms of what she's looking to wear, you know, who or what are her influences, what media she engaged with, are her peers dressing like this? And I'm not saying that to kind of shift blame or responsibility, but just looking at her age, she's in that preteen age bracket now. They're really starting to pull away from family and parents and lean into their interests, the outside world, their peer group, in terms of, I want to look like them, I want to fit in, I want to be other than you. So really, developmentally, I don't find it shocking that she wants these things.
I'm
kind of going, yeah, she sounds fairly on track, maybe a little ahead, but not massively, Sean, with that. But as a parent, when you feel your child begin to pull away from you and dismiss your views, or, you know, kind of, oh, who cares what you think? This is what I want to do. That's very painful for the parent. So also be aware that this is a stage of parenting when our parenting has to grow in line with their growth and development. Now, Sean, that doesn't mean go out and buy her the bikinis and the crop tops. But really, it's about not getting pulled into the argument. And that's the piece in this letter, you know. You were never buying her those clothes. She's allowed to want them. You're allowed to say, no, it's not happening. But getting pulled into an argument offers some kind of it's negotiable opening, doesn't it? You know, in a kind of, well, I can fight you out of this. I can pester you out of this. And actually, it's an argument about something you were never going to move on. So instead, I think that's the piece to look at as for this parent. Try validating her interest in her clothes, but within your boundaries. And it might sound something, Sean, like, oh, you know, I can see what styles you really like and what's really appealing to you. Now, those clothes are actually for older teenagers. But let's see if we can find something for you in the same colors. Let's see if these are the same color. This would really suit you. I really like the colors you're looking at, so that you're reinforcing, you're making choices. And I'm not getting you that top, but I can get you a top in that color, because I'm validating that you've made good choices for colors that suit you. A little bit like that. So you're holding boundaries, but you're acknowledging, oh, I can see what you're drawn to. Not yet, but let's get something in that general zone of color, not style. I'm playing it that way, you know. So if that's the way you can do it, I'm not saying your 11-year-old will go, oh, okay, then. But when your 11-year-old pushes the boundary, which is her job really at this stage, but if she's saying, no, I want this, everyone I know has it, you're ridiculous, I'm not getting it, you have to avoid the argument by stating, repeating once, your boundary, and then moving on. Just say, look, there's nothing to do about this now, because I've given you the answer and it's not negotiable. We either move on and get you something else, or we leave the store and there's no clothes being bought at all today.
Yeah.
Don't have to row about it, you know, but just hold that line.
Yeah, it would strike me as well that it's not just an issue. This 11-year-old might be tall for her age, but younger than her are, you know.
Oh, 100%.
You're hearing all the crop tops are available for 8-year-old, 9-year-olds. It's, you know.
Yes, and bikinis for little kids as well, and tops that have inappropriate adult-themed slogans. there's a whole thing about the clothes that are being made and marketed for children. So as parents, you are up against quite the battle. So it really is about saying, yeah, I see it. Love the pink for you. Let's find it somewhere else in something that is appropriate. Those are clothes for older bodies. You're just really kind of saying, but not dismissing, that's ridiculous, that looked terrible, or that's, you don't denigrate it, because we don't want to do any shaming around what she'd like to wear. But it's just about putting the boundary. I hear and see your desire to grow up. And it's my job as your parent just to slow this down a little for now, but I'm going to move a little. So you compromise a bit. You want a two-piece bathing suit, for example. I'm not getting a bikini, but I'm comfortable getting you a two-piece that has a vest and bottoms with it, vest and shorts, so that you're, yes, you can have a two-piece, but it won't look like that. It's going to look like this. So there is that little bit of compromise, but it's on your terms within your boundaries.
Just going back to this dyslexia question, someone's texting in to say, I'm dyslexic, I love to read. One of the most important things is books he's interested in, but you will find a Kindle or an ebook is a great option.
There's
a typeface that's dyslexic friendly. And you can also look up word meanings, which can help figure out what words mean.
Absolutely. And depending on the version of Kindle you have, you can download graphic novels onto those too. So that's actually a really good idea.
My 6-year-old daughter is in senior infant. She seems to be getting on well. At home, she has lots of big feelings. We find her to be emotional and highly sensitive. Small conflicts with her siblings or cousins can escalate quickly and can result in her shouting and having a meltdown. We've been trying to help her through these feelings while also getting to the bottom of what the root of it all is. To this purpose, I've been paying more attention to her interactions at school, and I've noticed that the few peers at her age level seem to be bossy with her. With some gentle curiosity and probing with her at home, I found that she's got into the habit of giving away little trinkets, pens, pencils, lunch or snack items to these children during the school day. From what I can tell, this started with one particularly confident child, but now appears to have spread, and the general group ethos is entering if you don't do this, I won't be your friend territory. She has told me if she doesn't give them her things, they'll be sad or they won't like her anymore. When she tries to say no, they ask if they can just borrow the items or they offer her an inferior swap. They won't let it go until she relents. It would appear she's been doing this every time. I'm worried that this behaviour is becoming the norm in their group, even outside of her giving her items away. I don't want for her to think she has to compromise herself and the things she is good at to fit in. I will probably have a word with her teacher, I would think so, so they at least are aware and can keep an eye out. But I know she's going to encounter situations and people like this all through her life. I would like to give her some tools to help her. We've done some playing and practicing saying no at home, but beyond that, is this just one of those things that will be solved with time that I need to let her figure out on her own?
I mean, it's a little, but not quite, because she's really young, Sean. First of all, I would definitely have a word with the teacher, because the teacher needs to be, some of these swaps might be going on at break time or out in the yard. The teacher needs to know most schools and most classrooms would have a no swap policy to avoid these exact tensions from emerging. You know, a lot of teachers would tell the kids, you don't give away your things. You don't take each other's stuff. No swaps in the classroom, because it often happens that a child will swap and by 2 o'clock they want their thing back, but the other child doesn't want to swap it back. Mm-hmm. And you end up with these rows and tensions. So I would definitely talk to the teacher, but be very mindful that we're now in the middle of May. The school year is winding down. So it's still worth doing, but there's a limited amount the teacher can affect at this late stage in the year. So, you know, I don't want to put all of this on the classroom teacher to address, but I would talk to the teacher. Now, I would also say to your daughter, you know what, you can use me as an excuse. So when somebody wants to swap or borrow something of yours, you can say, my mom says I'm not allowed to do swaps at school. So she mightn't have the confidence, Sean, to say to these other kids, no, I don't want to swap, especially for the inferior swap item. So instead, if she's like, my mom doesn't let me do that, oh, you know, my mom, blame the mom, whatever, blame the parent that I'm not allowed. And again, like you've already started at home, you're playing and practicing saying no. I would take it beyond practicing to say no. And I do a little bit of role play, because she's at that age where developmentally role play is the type of play she's using to better understand her world. But say, I'm going to be you be the kid who wants to swap something, and let her hear you doing it and how swap over, swap back those roles, keep doing that and repeat that play many, many times, because it's through repetition that she will learn. So you might have to play that little scenario, that little role play out for even 7-10 days, so that it's really integrated for her, that when someone then asks her to swap, she's like, no, and she can play out what you've role played at home. So you also want to introduce at home within that role play, practicing asking for stuff back, because I'm picking up here that kids are very smart. You know, if she's saying I'm not swapping, they're like, just let me borrow it. You know, So if she practices with you asking for her stuff back, you've had a borrow of my item, I want it back now, and let her practice doing that. And if the other kid says no, she asks twice. And if it's still no, she goes to the teacher, and really empowering her. That's not telling tales. That's asking for help and helping her to work that through. But I think she has to practice it, because this child is, you know, described as being sensitive, having big feelings. This might be a child who's more, oh, I'm holding it in, all those frustrations and things I'd like to say. And it's spilling out at home then in that overwhelm. And I'm exhausted from all the effort that's been in school.
Yeah.
I think, you know, but I also think though, Sean, having conversations with our kids this age, because they're really working out about friendships. You know, it's still something where they're going, who's like me, who's not. Talk about how friends include us no matter what. Even if we don't give them our stuff, a friend would always include you. So she's able to discern who is her friend and who is not, or who is behaving friendly towards her and who is not. And over the summer months, I would focus on strengthening her self-esteem and what I'm going to call quiet confidence. You can be sensitive and shy and still be confident. You know, so you don't have to change who she is as a personality or as a child. You can just have her assert herself gently. I'm not going to do that. No, thank you. That's not something I do. Give her things like chores, new opportunities, going into shops and cafes, ordering for herself, interacting with strangers in a really structured, boundaried way, like a cafe or a shop. That allows her to put herself out there a little bit more. Think of any summer camps that might not be with everyone she's at school with. You know, something in the community that might be a bit more niche or a little bit other than what the kids are typically doing. And then really tune into the kids that you see a compatible connection with. Now, that doesn't mean that we orchestrate our kids' friendships, but just paying attention to the kids she does seem to connect with and get on. And maybe over the summer, looking to orchestrate some play dates with those kids to really build up that she has options, that she has choices amongst friends in school.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like it started with one child and now there's a group of the cool kids. And
it does sound exactly like that.
And they're making life hard for the poor little thing.
It does. And it's so hard at that age because, I mean, and a clique in a group, that mentality can kick in very young. You know, it really can, especially with girls. It can happen younger. So if there is a sort of swap culture going on in the classroom, and all it would take is one, then two, then three, and all of a sudden there's a group of kids swapping pencil pairers or pencils or bringing in fancy pens. I think, you know, do the whole thing where you put one of those sticky name labels on, or make your own just with a sticker and write her name on them on everything. And that way, if somebody else's child goes home with it, it has her name on it. But I do think that's something that the teacher needs to know, because the teacher could enact it. There is a no swapping policy in this classroom.
Yeah. No, a texter says, I have a 6-year-old girl who had a very similar situation in school with swapping and then ended up with nothing in return. Yeah. I tried to encourage her to say no, but like that, she was afraid that other girls would be sad or not like her anymore. The tactic of my mum said no, my mum said I'm not allowed, my mum said I can't do that. The children in her class must think I am the world's meanest mammy. But if it keeps my daughter safe and happy, I'm happy for them to think that.
Exactly. Sometimes that's our job as parents, to be the mean by name only. Just give them the way out by using us, because it does work. It's a very common thing with kids this age, this swapping idea. But also, we're raising kids to always be kind to others, think about others' feelings. And Sean, that's really important. But we also have to include boundaries, that it's okay to say no. If you're not comfortable with something, you're allowed to say no. And that isn't making the other person sad. It's keeping yourself safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Joanna, thanks a million. As ever,
thank you.
Joanna Fortune there. If you have a question for Joanna, you can, as usual, send it to afternoon@newstalk.com. Afternoon@newstalk.com.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.